The way we identify shame is becoming familiar with the words that we use in our brains that are shame, okay? Should is a shame word. That's the number one, okay? So I should go for a run. I should post today on LinkedIn. I shouldn't miss. I should post every day. I should post whatever it is. We have all of these shoulds in our life, okay? There's people jokingly say, like, stop shoulding all over yourself. Need to, have to, got to, and must are shame in disguise. Hey, this is Mitch Whiting, and this is Scroll Sessions.
Welcome to Scroll Sessions. I'm Shane Hickenlooper, and I'm joined by my co-founder, Dan Page.
Together, we're the brains behind Scroll, a digital marketing agency. In this podcast, we'll explore the ups and downs of entrepreneurship, marketing, and growing a business.
Join us each week as we share our insights, our failures, and our successes with you.
Hit that subscribe button to stay updated on the latest episodes of the Scroll Sessions.
Mish, we're excited to have you on today. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for flying. You flew in only for us.
That's
today,
right. All the way from Arkansas. Feels so good. Feels so good to see the mountains. Feels good to be
with
you guys.
Are there any mountains in Arkansas?
There are. We're in the Ozark Mountains, but people in Utah would inevitably say, those aren't mountains, those are hills, which they'd be right compared to here. But yeah.
Yeah, what's like max altitude?
I mean, it's like 1,200 feet. So it's really, I don't know what it is. There's no mountains
compared to here.
But it's very hilly, gorgeous green, trees everywhere.
Yeah. It's beautiful. And the Ozarks, one of my favorite TV shows is Ozark.
Really?
With Jason Bateman.
Nice. Yeah. I haven't seen it.
Oh my gosh. It's incredible, but it's also.
It's a little dark.
It's very dark comedy.
Yeah.
And Jason Bateman's character is the way he is in real life. And you recognize he's just kind of a jerk, but great show.
Very different from Arkansas. Where I live is very light, very happy.
Yeah. So you aren't from Arkansas.
No.
But when did you move there?
A few years ago, I joined corporate Walmart, and that's how I discovered the magic of Bentonville. It's where Sam Walton founded Walmart, and we just fell in love with the community. It's just an amazing, amazing place.
What is it that you loved about the community?
Yeah, the best way I can describe it is from a quote from Clayton Christensen, who said that people would rather feel needed than loved. And I haven't forgotten that quote. And I've never seen that principle be more fully lived out than in Northwest Arkansas, because nobody has family. And there were times, like when we moved out there, a month before Thanksgiving, for example, we're in the grocery store and some super nice Southern woman just starts talking to us, right?
Yeah.
She said, what are you guys doing for Thanksgiving? And we're like, oh, we don't know yet. You're coming over. And it's that kind of like
that kind of
community, because no one has family and you need each other.
Yeah, wow. That's really interesting. Why have you chosen to stay in Arkansas?
the friends, the community. Yeah. It's also the lowest cost of living state in the country. Everyone in Arkansas would hate me for saying all of this because the traffic's getting worse. Everybody's figuring out how amazing Bentonville
is. It's like, don't
is,
come to Arkansas. It's
Utah,
not great.
Yeah. There's Utah shirts 10, that say, years ago. Yeah. There's shirts that say like, move to Fayetteville, Bentonville's lame because people don't want people to live there as much, but it's amazing. We love it.
What took you out to Arkansas? Like, why? I mean, other than Walmart, like, why choose to stay there? Why get into what you're doing now?
Yeah. I guess there's two questions there. What took us to Arkansas truly was Walmart, and then we fell in love with the community. I took a job out here in Utah for a year and a half. It was an amazing opportunity, and then I became an accidental entrepreneur. We can get way deeper into my story, but yeah. I went from, really struggling to transforming my life in a way that enabled me to help other people who I saw were struggling in a similar way that I was. And the more that I offered to help people, the more people wanted help. And so it became a business. And at one point I was making more money in 10 hours a week than I was in 40 hours a week in my day job. And I'm like, okay, well, this is not only what I want to do, but like financially logical. it made sense. And so I always thought entrepreneurship would be like a leap. The entrepreneurial leap, right? Where you burn all boats and don't have a plan B. And so you have to like make it work. But for me, it was something much different, which was serving and loving and building and giving in the way that I knew how. And from that, inevitably, success comes from, is what I believe.
What was the catalyst to, start you on that journey? Maybe it is a single decision. But it was probably a series of decisions. And then obviously, totally. It's like, oh, it makes sense logically. I'm making more money in 10 hours than I am in 40. And this is fun and I enjoy it. But like, what was the catalyst to make that change?
Yeah. I have this picture that I really, really treasure because it's a picture of me on a, on an executive jet working for Walmart, the largest company in the world. And you don't have to know me at all to look at that picture and to see that I was struggling. Like, I'm smiling, but my eyes, like, you know the difference when someone's really smiling versus when they're trying to smile. Yeah. And you just see suffering behind my eyes. And the crazy thing about it is I did not know that I was suffering in that moment. I was on an executive jet for the first time. I thought it was awesome. I was like living the dream, right?
Is this your first job out of college?
This is my first job out of college.
And your role, you were telling me before this, was a role that many people take a long time to get.
Yeah, how long? Many people take this role 12 to 15 years, you know, into their career.
So it was the dream.
The dream. It was a miracle for me. It was a series of events that led to me getting this role. And I was happy, I thought, but I was really suffering. And it wasn't until I was at the doctor's office a few months later where I was getting an allergy shot in my rear end because it snows pollen in Arkansas. It's really brutal. In the spring, but how stressed are you? And I thought about it and all the things that I was grateful for. I was a pretty optimistic person. And I said, probably like a 2 out of 10. And my wife, who's so loving and so authentic and so precise, looked at me and said, are you kidding me? You're like a 9. And I sat between my wife and this doctor feeling a little bit awkward. You know, it's kind of like when you tell your love story and you have differing details and it just like, it starts off to feel awkward, you know? Yeah. But some part of me knew she was right, but it was the first moment that I had ever started to realize it. And so I think I said something like probably like an 8 out of 10 and just, we moved on. And then it was shortly after that, that one of my mentors and friends was talking to me on the phone and I was just very open with him about how I was feeling about life and the things I was struggling with. And he said, listen, you're Mitch Whiting. You love people like I've never seen before. You're a high achiever. You're this, you're that. But do you realize you view yourself as a wounded bird? And that pierced my soul. It just hit me so hard. And I knew that I was truly living a 9 out of 10 stress life. And I looked back and I would go to downtown Bentonville Square where you always run into friends and people that you know. And I remember times looking at my wife and saying, hey, we should go into that store over there before she would see our friends when I would see them because I didn't want to talk to them, the people that I loved the most, because my personality was suppressed and I didn't want people asking about me. And so from there, I just knew I wanted to change.
Why do you feel like your personality was suppressed and that you didn't want people asking about you?
Yeah, I found something very interesting, which was that a lot of my clients experience this as well, which are people that are high performing, yet still experiencing a high level of suffering. And one of the things that they experience without being conscious of is they feel like they're not as far along as they should be, while simultaneously feeling like a fraud for being as far along as they are. This really unique dichotomy where you can feel both at the same time. And I think part of the reason why I was so unaware is because gratitude was getting in my way. That sounds like a very strange concept when we talk about gratitude being one of the most powerful emotions that we can feel. And true gratitude, of course, doesn't get in the way. But the form of gratitude that a lot of us experience does, which is to be grateful for all that we have in a way that doesn't allow us to admit that we want and need more from life. And so when I'm sitting in the doctor's office, I'm thinking about my beautiful wife, my kids, I'm thinking about the job that I have, my relationship with God, like my friends and family that love me, not and ignoring the fact that I have like 50 hours a week that I'm spending in stress, anxiety, overwhelm, self-doubt, comparison, judgment, shame, hesitation, procrastination. And so what I found is a higher form of gratitude. I personally believe the highest form of gratitude is abundance. And true abundance is to be able to be grateful for everything you have and for that to be enough with arms wide open for all that God still has for you. That it's okay to admit that you want and need more from life because God wants that for you. He wants to give you more.
And how did you make that shift to then becoming more grateful for everything?
Because you obviously took a job here in Utah, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I picked up a book called Grit because, like my clients, the problem that they think they have, the false problem, is they think they don't have enough grit, commitment, focus. You know, and so I picked up a book, Grit. Actually, you know, one of my family members sent it to me. They must have clearly seen that I had the same problem. Just kidding. After reading that book, I was still struggling. And so I picked up another book, which was, David Goggins.
Oh, yeah.
Can't Hurt Me.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know, if grit isn't enough, maybe I need to learn how to suffer, how to love, to suffer.
And he has a very interesting approach to, like, pretty much just calling everyone pieces of crap.
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly. And that's how I felt about myself once I realized I was living a 9 out of 10 stress life.
Yeah.
And I was unaware of it.
Yeah, it's like pure self-deprecation, basically.
Right. And so I read that book and I found out something very unique about myself that must be different than most people, which is I hate suffering.
Nobody hates suffering.
Nobody, just me. Yeah. And so that didn't work for me. And so I thought, you know, maybe I just need to hack my habits. And so I read Atomic Habits. And it was inspiring and motivating, like I think the other 3 million people who have read it. But for me, it wasn't transformative. It takes 21 days or whatever, and I don't even know that that was in that book. But I've grown up with this idea that it takes 21 days to build a habit. Mm-hmm. And I would always be disappointed when I would do it for 21 days, and then I'd miss, and then I feel like I'm starting over again. Yeah. And so it didn't transform me long term. And so then I thought, you know, none of this is working, and so maybe I need to forget about grit and suffering and habits. And I, you know, found a book called Willpower Doesn't Work. So let's just forget about the willpower and do the opposite. And I still was struggling. And so then I thought, maybe none of this is my issue.
So you maybe ran it's the just gamut with self-help, didn't you?
Yeah. I'm like, and I've been listening to self-help, Tony Robbins, and self-help, like reading like How to Win Friends and Influence People, The Greatest Salesman in the World by Og Mandino, since I was 10 years old.
Yeah.
And that's what a lot of my clients experience as well, which is a frustration that they've read all the books, they've listened to all the podcasts, they know the YouTube gurus and entrepreneurs, but they're still not experiencing the alignment, the transformation within themselves, or experiencing the promises.
Which is right where you were at.
Right where I was at. And so I thought, maybe none of this is the issue. Maybe it's not grit. Maybe it's not focus. Maybe it's not commitment. Maybe I just need more money. That will solve my problems.
Yeah, and so like does.
Robert Kiyosaki, Rich Dad, Poor Dad. Yeah, and I go into like, maybe I need to sell vending machines and have passive income. Maybe it's ebooks, someone else's ebook that I can rebrand and sell. Maybe it's, we actually started an Etsy shop to try to sell like COVID forms and like all this stuff. And that didn't work either. And what I realized was I was missing what I now call the manual to the greatest technology of the universe, the human brain. And needing to understand not just the psychology and the self-help or psychology and philosophy that we all love from self-help, which I think is perfectly named self-help because it's so helpful. When you're listening to the podcast or you are, you know, reading the book, you're motivated, you're inspired, and it's helpful. But I ultimately found it was temporary compared to what I now call self-transformation, which is to understand the neuroscience of how to rewire your brain so that you can move from reframing your thoughts to rewiring your brain, temporary, motivating, inspiring to permanently transformative. And that's when my life began to change. I learned the ability to change my core beliefs, to rewire my brain in a way that got me my 50 hours a week back of living in what I call a primal state, the stress, anxiety, overwhelm, self-doubt, hesitation, procrastination, judgment, shame, comparison.
So what was it, because you were reading all these books trying to find the answer, what was it that actually helped you realize, wait, I need self-transformation instead of just like self-care? I know you're a runner. Did running have anything to do with it? Was it another book you read? Was it a coach? What was it that took you from, man, self-care is not working, to, oh, it's self-transformation?
Yeah.
I think it was more self-awareness than anything, like just understanding yourself better.
I think it began with self-awareness, right? Yeah. Like realizing that I was suffering for the first time, really
admitting it,
you know, allowed me to then have some self-acceptance of who I am and that it's okay to suffer, right? And for high performers, it's really hard because like you think like this term anxiety is like so heavily used in our society, and there's like diagnosed anxiety, but then there's anxiety that every human experiences every day. It's a normal part of life. If you're not experiencing anxiety, that means you stopped breathing. Like if we're living, we're experiencing stress and anxiety. Yeah. And I don't think I was okay with saying I feel anxious because I felt like I was labeling myself when I was like, well, no, I'm not struggling to get out of bed. Like I'm performing at a very high level, but I was spending 50 hours of every week in an anxious state. And so I was struggling. And so I can't remember your question.
It's just like, how did you get from the more or less self-aware to transformation? Like what took those steps to make that happen?
Yeah. I mean, a lot of action. That's what I think was missing for me in a lot of ways was we learn and we learn and we learn without, and it's not taking action. All of us are trying, we are taking action, but it's consistent daily action. I took this, it's called the Adobe Creative Type Test. And I got my result back of what my creative type was. And it said I was a visionary. And I thought, cool, sounds awesome. And I read it and it did resonate pretty deeply with me. And it said, I see potential in everyone and everything around me, which has always felt true. And it's the reason I'm a coach now. Like my mom's always called me a rescuer. I've always been there for people and seen their potential. And it said my untapped potential, which is really interesting because the very thing we always go to is like, where's our weakness, right? We don't focus on our strengths. And so I'm like, oh, untapped potential. Like that's what the problem is. And I think it was right. It said my untapped potential was consistently fueling my visions with daily action. I was like, oh, my word of the year that year in that moment with my wife was consistency. This is when I was living that 9 out of 10 stress life. I'm like, I'm not consistent in anything. And so I'm like, can we have that be our word of the year? My wife's like, sure, that's a great word of the year. You know, I was just begging to like become consistent as a person. And so I started posting content on LinkedIn daily. And a lot of people post content on LinkedIn for the opportunity to make money, to grow a business, to become a solopreneur. But for me, I just did it because I was struggling. I wanted something to be consistent in. And that was the thing I decided to be consistent in. And what most people don't know is that we retain 10% of what we read, but we retain 90% of what we teach others. And so for me, it's been always about becoming. It's been about me committing to myself to learn something every day, to digest it, and be able to write it in a way that might impact others, but that I would remember and transform from that understanding and that lesson.
I love that. It's something that I think is common is people will assume anxiety and consistency sometimes have a lot in common. And, you know, coming from the running world, and this is something that even I've struggled with, being consistent, sometimes I get anxiety around it. So I'm like, if I'm not consistent, then I have anxiety around the fact I'm not consistent. And then I'm sitting there instead of on a run, anxious, right? Procrastination.
What is it about? What is it about the consistency that brings you anxiety?
The fear that I'm not going to be able to keep it up.
Like you'll miss a run. Right. And it might end up being another run that you miss.
Yeah. Miss a LinkedIn post and then beat yourself up over it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's shame, which is really interesting, kind of a buzzword in the day that we live in. But the more that I've learned about shame, I have learned that it's pervasive. That's the word I use for shame, pervasive in all of our lives. And I created a model, a 3-step process of replacing shame with grace that I'd be love to share with you.
Please do it right now.
It would help you with running. It would help you with posting on LinkedIn. The 3 steps are first to identify shame, okay? The second step is to respond to shame with grace. And then the 3rd step is to choose grace over shame, okay? Identify, respond, choose. The way we identify shame is becoming familiar with the words that we use in our brains that are shame, okay? Should is a shame word. That's the number one, okay? So I should
go for a run.
I should post today on LinkedIn. I shouldn't miss. I should post every day. I should post whatever it is. We have all of these shoulds in our life, okay? There's people jokingly say, like, stop shoulding all over yourself. And it's a good term because it's unless you say, I shouldn't should all over myself, then you're shaming yourself about shame, which we also do.
It's like how much wood would a woodchuck chuck?
That's right. And so should is a shame word is one of the best ways you can identify shame. But need to, have to, got to, and must are shame in disguise. Those really get you. I need to do this.
I'm getting anxiety just thinking about that because I use those words every day to myself.
Every day. Pervasive. That's the word. Every day with yourself. Every day with yourself. Every day with myself. We're using shame. And so once we identify it, I just call it out. I just say, oh, that was shame. The second step is now to respond to shame with grace. And the way we do that is just with one sentence that we say to ourselves, which is, I don't have to. Just release ourselves. I don't have to. And it gets really interesting when you think of all the things you don't have to do. I'm a father and a husband, and I love being a father and husband. But I also, through the lens of grace, realize I don't have to be a father and a husband if I don't want to. There's a lot of people not being a father anymore that aren't there for their kids. There's a lot of husbands that are no longer married, that are no longer there for their wives. But what I find about myself is from a place of grace is that I'm freaking awesome because I love my wife and I love my kids and I show up every day, not because I have to, even though there's times where we feel like we have to. But when we realize that we don't have to, we get to choose grace, which takes us to the third step, which is to choose grace over shame. And there's two ways that we can choose grace over shame. One of them gets really interesting, which is to say, and I don't want to. Because shame makes us feel like, okay, I don't have to, but then we go right back to, but I have to, right? And we show up as a dad or as a husband or whatever, you know, as a runner or as a LinkedIn poster. And the best example I can give to people that are believers of God is a lot of times we have this desire to pray, of course, but we have this shame that comes up at night where we get into bed exhausted at the end of the day and we think, I should say a prayer, right? You ever experienced this? We all have. And I just say, oh, that's shame that I should pray. And instead, I then say, I don't have to. And it's really weird. It's like feels like rebellious sometimes when I share this with people who are believers. And the next thing that I have said, which is the first way to choose grace over shame, is, and I don't want to. And I go to bed with a smile, total peace, knowing that God's not like, I need your prayer. He doesn't need my prayer. Like it was for me in the first place. And that's totally okay. The second way, which is the most common way we choose grace over shame, because of how incredible we are, especially from a place of grace, we realize that we're freaking awesome, like I said. We say, but I can and I want to. And so the next time you feel I don't want or I should go on a run, you just identify that's shame. And you say, I don't have to go on a run, but I can. And typically you find you want to.
Right. Okay.
And then you come from a place of desire instead of duty. And the fancy word for desire is faith. And faith precedes miracles. You experience miracles in your life and you become someone who's consistent rather than someone who does things consistently. There's a big difference there.
Well, and I think that, I mean, going back to, you referenced Atomic Habits, and there's a big piece in there where he talks about basically wanting to become your future self. And obviously compounding habits can get you there, but he talks about the easiest way to do those compounding habits is to basically foresee yourself. It's the desire of the one's future self that will get you there. You want to be a runner. You need to do things that put you in that mindset of a runner, right?
And totally. And change your identity.
Yeah.
And then you become that identity. Yeah. One of the things that I've found that's slightly different, in fact, it's very different thinking than that, but it gets you to a very similar result, which is I personally believe that you cannot become a better version of yourself, but only more of who you really are. Like Michelangelo spoke of his sculpture, David, he didn't sculpt David, but rather took everything away that wasn't David.
Yeah.
And again, what we find behind grace is that we're freaking awesome. We're these powerful beings, like amazing people. And it's really the hours that we're spending in this primal state instead of a powerful state that is suppressing our personality, suppressing the real us. And it's by doing the work of chipping away everything that's not us that we reveal our most powerful self, who ends up being someone who's very consistent, very intentional, very present with the people they love, typically pretty funny. People are pretty funny and really awesome. And so the work that I do with my clients is to help them chip away all of the hours that they're spending in a primal state that are keeping them from being their real self.
So great. I guess my last question on it would be grace and accountability. how do I still find accountability when I'm giving myself so much grace?
Yeah.
Because I think a lot of times when I give myself too much grace, I'm like, no, I deserve a day off, or I don't need to do that, or I don't want to do that today. Then I start to chip away at my accountability and I don't hold myself as accountable. So what would be your response to that? Like, how do I still find accountability in that process?
I can clearly see why that's a fear. I think once you experience grace, it'll change you. And okay. You'll see that you're actually more consistent and powerful than you realize, and that it's impossible to create powerfully from a primal state. But from a powerful state, you can do nothing but create powerfully. Grace is a powerful state. It's a very powerful state. Shame, not so much. It's a primal state. And so our shame is actually keeping us from operating at our highest level. And from grace, again, you reveal your real self. Living in a powerful state is to be in alignment with who you really are, which is a person who's consistent and intentional and funny and present. And you'll just find that you actually love to run. You actually love to move your body. You actually love to be in conversations with people. You actually love to reach out and serve and build and love and create in the way that you've always wanted to, but it's these primal states that are keeping us from doing it.
Wow. It's incredible you say that, because I think that the people that I see that I want to be like, where I see people out there that are running all the time or successful entrepreneurs, I see them out in the world and I'm like, what is it inside of you that clicks so much that you can be so confident, so aware, and so actionable at all times? And to me, it seems like they are always in action and confident. And I think you're kind of answering it in the way that is impossible to be understood, which is that they give themselves grace to understand themselves. Once you really understand yourself, you are in that state of, you're not being primal anymore. You're progressive and you're actually working towards something. So that's pretty incredible. I've never understood it that way.
What for you, Mitch, what was like the shift? Like, maybe there was a single instance, maybe there wasn't, of when you like decided to not be shameful anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Like what was the catalyst to you, you know, coming up with your 3-step method, coming up with, you know, and realizing that, hey, this is obviously a problem for myself, probably a problem for a lot of high achievers. And how did that all start?
Yeah, because you can coach other people to do it. So there has to have been that experience for you too, right?
It was, I discovered it, I basically co-created it across many different coaching sessions with clients, where I just realized that over and over again, as we dove into the deeper, the unconscious thinking that was, you know, negatively impacting my clients' lives and keeping them from living. I'll tell a story that's like really a good example of this, which is, this is one of the most impactful coaching moments that I've had in my life, which was this client who, since the age of 12, has been afraid that he will go to prison. Okay. Very unique limiting belief.
For no
and
reason?
He has done nothing illegal, very ethical, powerful person. And the challenge with this individual is that his dad was put in prison in 2008 during the financial market crash. And so when that happened, the meaning that he assigned to his experience, which is what our beliefs are, they're the meaning that we assign to our experience, was that someone could frame me at any time. I'm probably going to go to jail too. So from age 12 to age 30, every day he's lived in fear. Every day he's lived in fear. And when you have this thought of, you know, I'm going to go to jail, and you really look at it, it's easy to have shame of like, what's wrong with me?
Yeah.
I'm not going to go to jail, obviously, right? Like, am I stupid? Like that, our brains go there, right? And we like start beating ourselves up. Yeah. We're like, I haven't done anything wrong. Of course, I'm not going to go to prison. But there's a difference between knowing something is true and believing it's true. We can know that we're good enough, but in the moment, do we believe we're good enough? No. We can know things are going to work out, but in the moment, do you and I believe that it's going to work out? No. And so not always does, you know, our belief align with our logic, and that's the experience for all of us, but in his case with going to prison. And so the judgment side of our brain, the shame side of our brain, looks at our thinking like, I'm going to go to prison, but I've done nothing wrong, as really stupid. Like our brains, like we start beating ourselves up and saying like,
why would I think that?
That doesn't make sense at all. But what I invite my clients to observe their minds with is fascination, curiosity, and grace. instead of the judgment and shame, because judgment and shame prevents us from ever seeing our unconscious thinking clearly. And so from a place of fascination, curiosity, and grace, I asked him question after question after question to really understand, like, what's everything that he's experiencing around his thinking. And ultimately, one of the things that I shared with him, and this was in a group of 10 other individuals that I was coaching at the time in one of my group coaching programs. And he's just so courageous, right? Like sharing this openly, sharing his story. One of the first times he had ever publicly shared that his dad even went to prison, right?
He has 10 people in this
10 people. Group with him. Yeah, never. He's like had told one other person. And one of the things that I shared with him was that when we live from a place of fear, we immediately guarantee the very thing we're afraid of. And so he's afraid that he's going to go to prison. On occasion, I've referred to the primal state as the prison state and the powerful state as the freedom state. Every day since he was 12 years old, he's lived in a state of prison, of being afraid of going to prison. So when we act from a place of fear, we immediately guarantee the very thing we're afraid of. And when we transformed his limiting belief, I said, how do you feel right now? And he looked at me, emotional, tears, said, I feel free. Not even thinking about the analogy there. And I said, that's what it feels like to walk out of prison for the first time. And someone else in the group goes, it sounds like you served your time.
Oh, that's cool. That's
it was awesome. Really amazing. And so we all walked out of that session deciding that we'd all served our time living in this state of stress, anxiety, overwhelm. And we were ready to go use my methodologies to go do the work to transform, to rewire our brains, and to step into freedom, step into a powerful state consistently.
Yeah, that's awesome. I think I hope I'm quoting this right, but I think it's Tony Robbins, and he says something to the effect of, like, once you remove fear, like, gratitude usually fills its space, right? And then gratitude leads to abundance. And so, like, I think those... it's really true. Like, I have no doubt, like, immediately once he removed those fears, like, his immediate, you know, his immediate response is, you know, gratitude.
Isn't it interesting, right? His whole life he's had freedom, but wasn't experiencing it. So you start to have the gratitude of all the freedom that you've always had.
Yeah.
And we cannot change our past, right? You can't change whether or not your dad went to prison or whether or not whatever has happened in your life, the trauma, the challenges, the adversity, the struggle, the pain. But you can change the story about your past. And it's not that you lie to yourself and change the story. It's that you see what has always been true. And the truth shall make you free. What is true will always move you to a powerful state. And when we're thinking something untrue, it'll move us to a primal state. And that's what keeps us stuck. It's just believing things that aren't true. Like, I'm not good enough. Like, things won't work out. Like, I shouldn't have done that. None of those things are true. Some form of the opposite is true. And when we step into that, some form of the opposite, when we discover the truth sets us free.
So, the thing that I think of there is thoughts and beliefs are different.
And absolutely.
It's important to recognize when you have a thought that it's not necessarily your belief.
Mm-hmm.
And to have more faith in your belief than you do your thought, right? So your thought might be like, that's stupid. And you immediately think, because I thought that, I believe that.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't. You know you don't believe that you're stupid. So why listen to that thought? And I think that's been a hard thing in my life and in a lot of people's lives, is that our thoughts are not our beliefs, and recognizing that we don't have to listen to our thoughts all the time. You can think whatever you want. It's your action, your belief in that thought that is going to propel you forward or backward, right?
Yeah, a thought or a belief will not evoke an emotion until you believe it. But the moment you believe a thought is the moment it evokes an emotion. Like, you could look at me and say, man, your purple hair is so ugly.
Right.
I don't have purple hair. I don't believe you. I'm not worried about it. But if, you know, as a kid, people said, you know, something about my red hair or how skinny I was or whatever, and I believed it. Yeah. I chose to accept that thought as my own. It evokes an emotion.
And beliefs are, I mean, they're here, right? They're in your soul, your heart, mm-hmm. right?
And they're unconscious.
Yes. Yeah. And guide you for right or for wrong. You know, we see a lot of people believe a lot of things and be incredibly convicted about their belief, you know? So I think it's it's definitely important to decide what you believe.
Yeah. For sure. Yeah. The majority of our beliefs were formed before the age of seven.
Sheesh.
So we all have beliefs that are conscious that we mm-hmm. decide, but then there's most of our beliefs are undecided. Yeah. And it's not that they're undecided. Every belief that we make is a decision. Every belief that we make, I say make, but have, because we do make our beliefs. We create them. Like a belief is the meaning that you assign to your experience. It's your choice, right? And so two people can experience the same thing, but assign different meaning to it. One can be traumatized and the other can be empowered. And that's one of the most beautiful things about rewiring your brain, transforming your beliefs, is the worst thing that happened to you can become the best thing that happened to you. Not because you've changed what happened, but because you changed the meaning that you assigned to that experience.
Mm. I think Stephen Colbert had Anderson Cooper on his show once, and Anderson Cooper's mother, I think, had just passed away. And Anderson Cooper asked Stephen Colbert, "You believe that we have to be thankful for every situation in life?" And Anderson Cooper kind of starts to cry and says, "Do you really believe that?" to Stephen Colbert, because he's obviously sad that mm-hmm. something terrible just happened to his mother. And Stephen Colbert responds with, and I'm going to butcher this. I'm sorry, Stephen Colbert. I know he's listening. I'm going to butcher this, but in a nutshell, he says, in order to show gratitude for life, we have to show gratitude for all of it. We have to just be grateful for existence, right? Life is a gift. And if life is a gift, everything that happens in it is a part of that gift, regardless of if it's good or bad. And I think that that is such a, that message hit me so powerfully, because it's easy to say like, why me, why me, why me, when bad things happen, right? Like, me and my wife struggle with infertility, and it's easy to look at everyone else around us and be like, you're all having kids. We started trying having kids 2 years before you, 3 years before you. But to immediately just say life is a gift, and even the bad things that happen in life are a part of that journey, and to recognize the good that comes from it. It shifted my mindset to believing that, and that everything was a gift. And I don't feel sadness around infertility as often anymore, because now I'm like, oh, this is awesome that I get to just experience life with my wife, and that I get to have all these things along the way. So gratitude is very, very impactful.
It is so impactful, and what you're experiencing is not a change of circumstance, but a change of meaning.
Yeah, nothing changed. The only thing that's changed
is you still don't have a child, right, but your belief about that experience changed. And I personally have found that through the lens of becoming, there are no such thing as problems.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. Well, and I think with like Stephen Colbert too, like he's got very strong beliefs. He's a very strong
Catholic
Christian man, and he's very like, I don't know, outspoken about it with guests. Like mm-hmm. he has guests that push him on that topic quite often, and vice versa. But you see it come out in him too. Like, he's very convicted and really, truly, I feel like believes in obviously what he believes in, and it guides everything he does too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So we've talked a lot about some of the principles that you do, that you use, some of the coaching things that you do, as well as some of the stories from some of the people that you coach. I kind of want to talk about Mitch a little bit
mm-hmm.
and some of your personal experiences. I know that you obviously worked for Walmart. You made a shift from Walmart because you felt that sense of overwhelmingness and
stress. The reason why I made a shift from Walmart, because a company reached out. It's an amazing opportunity. And during that transition was during the same time that I was struggling. And it was just, they happened together, but not as a result of
not as a result. Because then I remember we even spoke while you were working at your last job, and you were coaching at the time.
Mm-hmm.
But when was the first time you ever actually charged someone for coaching?
Yeah. I'm really excited to see this client, my first client this week. I've got 35 clients that are flying in from all over the country to be at this event with me. And I'm hosting a private dinner for them. And it's going to be really special, just sharing stories for them to get to know each other for the first time, for me to be in person with them, to meet them in real life for the first time. And this individual I just love so deeply because they changed my life by being my first client, right? And yeah. I had experienced this self-transformation, right? And was living more consistently in a powerful state and seeing my old self and my new self, which is really not old and new, but just more or less of who I really am, right? Because we can't become a better version of ourselves, only more of who we really are. And so I became more of who I really was, and I could see with more clarity other people who were suffering and struggling because I had admitted that I wanted and needed more from life. And I could see when other people weren't, when they were struggling but ignoring it because of this gratitude that they were hanging on to rather than this clarity and abundance. And so one particular individual, my first client, posted on LinkedIn, super vulnerable post, not like the vulnerable that's like designed to get likes, but the vulnerable of saying, I'm struggling. Does anybody have any advice for me? I'm like, wow, that takes courage, right? To really just open up and ask for help. And I just sent them a DM and I said 4 words, I can help you. That was it. And I look back at that and these 4 words are what I now call the 4 words to making money in business. As a coach, as a service provider, as a consultant, whatever you're doing is I can help you. So many people are trying to sell instead of serve. And when I just served and I said, I can help you, I said, I'd happy to, you know, be happy to spend an hour for free with you. Let's talk about exactly where you're at, exactly where you want to go. And if we both see it's a good fit, we can talk about what it looks like to work together. And we felt it was a perfect fit to work together, that I could, because of my experiences, I could uniquely help him with what he was going through, because your ideal client is always just some version of you. And he was experiencing the same things that I was experiencing. And so he took 24 hours to think about it, right? I gave him a price. And he talked to his wife, and the first thing he said back on our follow-up call was, I said, how was the last 24 hours in making a decision? And he's like, oh, it's been crazy, like the kids, you know, this. And I'm expecting him to say, we didn't get a chance to talk about it. But he surprised me, and he just said, but anyway, I'm all in. And it was such a beautiful moment, because all I wanted to do was help him, right? After everything I had been through, and I knew I could help this person go from suffering to thriving, or from surviving to thriving. And I gave up swearing a long time ago. I just decided I'm not going to swear anymore. And as soon as I hit end call, a big hell yeah just burst out of my mouth, because I had experienced this beautiful moment of money and meaning being synonymous for the first time.
Mm. You know what? Awesome. I never really believed in like coaching or consulting.
Mm-hmm.
And I was watching the show Ted Lasso, where he's meeting with a therapist and he starts to get mad at her, saying like, you don't care about me. Stop pretending to care about me. Like, you're charging me an hourly rate to be here. And then she turned it back on him and said, well, you coach a bunch of young men and you get paid to do it. Like, do you not love those men? And it flipped him upside down, and therapy became a critical part of his life.
Amazing.
And I think that where you said money and meaning come together is that impactful moment of recognizing I can love someone, but I have to make an income and I have to be able to provide for myself and show value. And you can do that synonymously. And that flipped my head on coaching and consulting.
And I don't even think of it, and this might, I don't know how this could be interpreted, but I don't view it as a way to provide for my family, even though it is the way I provide for my family. But what's powerful about coaching and therapy, any way that you're investing in yourself, is when you see yourself, when you get to the point where you see yourself as worth spending money on, that's something that a lot of people struggle with. We're so used to spending money on owning things, but not used to, as a society, spending money on owning our future. We're not used to spending money on becoming, right? And that's the most fulfilling thing we can do, next to giving. I think the two ways that I've spent my dollars that have been the most fulfilling are becoming, specifically the highest form of becoming, which is what I call becoming someone who helps other people to become. I think that's the ultimate purpose of this life. And then giving, which the reason I give, my wife and I have decided to give, is when we see an opportunity to help, to give, to help people become someone who helps other people to become. And so our whole life is centered on this idea of becoming. And that's what happens when you create. So I don't do it to provide for my family, even though that is how I provide for my family. I do it. I have a price for someone to pay for coaching so that they have a container to invest in themselves, to see themselves as worth it, and then to be all in, to be ready to transform. Because people try to coach people for free. Therapy, a lot of times, it's so commoditized that people show up and it's more of just a thing they do instead of something that they're all in. But when someone pays a significant amount of money, they're hanging on to every word. They're ready to try every single thing. And when you take action, that's when your life changes. It's not the learning. Like Tony Robbins says that knowledge is not power. Knowledge is potential power. It's applied knowledge that's power.
Mm. I love that. So do you feel like while you were working your current job, you got up to 10 customers while you were there? You were working a 40-hour work week,
yes,
at your normal job, but you were making more money
in 10 hours per week than I was in 40. Yeah.
So how many customers did you have before you quit?
I don't really remember.
Not sure.
Actually, yeah.
And talk a little bit about, were you getting any fulfillment from the job that you had?
Yeah, a lot, which is really fascinating.
More than you felt like you were getting even when you worked at Walmart.
Yes. And it had nothing to do with the company or the job.
Right, of course.
And that's what's so cool about this. And I say that very specifically because our circumstances do not create our emotions. And this is something that most of us don't know. We walk around believing that our circumstances create our emotions. Like, oh, my kid just hit my other kid. I'm so frustrated. Right. Or my manager.
You chose to be frustrated.
Yeah. My manager just gave me this horrible feedback and doesn't understand me. I feel terrible right now.
Yeah.
The circumstances we believe create our emotions. But if I were to say, let's say somebody that you love deeply passed away a few hours ago, but you don't know about it, how do you feel right now?
Totally fine.
Yeah.
Whatever you're feeling, you'll continue to feel. So the circumstance happened. Someone you love passed away. You don't feel an emotion. Did the circumstance create an emotion for you?
You just chose to feel.
You don't. You still don't feel anything.
It's just the circumstances. Knowledge of the circumstance.
Once you know about it, you begin to have thoughts.
Yeah.
It's our thoughts that create our emotions, not our circumstance.
Mm.
And so, I changed my thoughts about my work, and I decided that I started living in alignment with my values. I truly, one of the challenges that my clients experience is that they're frustrated that God, family, friends, health, and hobbies are their number one priority, but that work remains their number one priority in practice, right? It's a big struggle for all of us. Well, I started living in a way where I was fulfilled in my relationship with God. I was fulfilled with my relationship with my family. I was fulfilled with my hobbies. I was fulfilled with my health. And so by the time I showed up to work, which was, I decided my fifth priority. Imagine saying that to your manager. Work is my fifth priority, right? We don't live in a day where people do that, right? But one of my mentors does. And everybody in the company knows that work is his fifth priority. He's the highest performer in the company, right? In his department, has gotten more raises than anyone else I know while work being his fifth priority. And so I was so inspired by this. I'm like, that's the way I'm going to live. I'm going to live in alignment. And so I started to live this way. And by the time I got to the parking lot at this company, before I walked in every day, I told myself, this is my greatest passion. Because it was true at that moment, because the other four passions had been fulfilled. And so I went into work loving what I do. And so one of the invitations that I consistently give clients who are unfulfilled at work, which is many of us, is to never leave a job until you love it.
Oh.
Because it's the ultimate indicator that you've become a master self-coach, that you have control now of how you think and feel regardless of your circumstance. And I found one of my clients who is an attorney, an amazing attorney, but realized he was very unfulfilled as an attorney and didn't like it, ended up realizing that what he loves to do is teach. Okay? He loves to teach others. And he changed the meaning that he assigned to his experience, changed his belief about it being an attorney, and he realized that in a court of law, he is a teacher. He's educating and teaching the judge, the jury, everybody in that room. And he fell in love with being an attorney again. He didn't have to leave his job.
Yeah,
and he has great passion for it again.
Wasn't a circumstance.
Wasn't a circumstance. Yeah.
Just needed to change his thoughts. No, that's awesome. Where in your journey have you felt like you've been most impacted by mentors? We've spent a lot of time about you helping others. A couple mentions of mentors, but like specifically in your journey, where have mentors come in and given you, you know, advice that have, you know, more or less pushed you along this path?
Yeah. I think of, he's my financial coach. His name's Chris Claflin, who outside of my wife and my parents has had the greatest impact on who I am out of anyone in my entire life. And he was the one that said, Mitch, do you realize you view yourself as a wounded bird? He was willing to challenge me and to call out and to see me clearly for who I am, but also see me for who I really am or who I could be. And a true leader challenges and supports, right? If you're just challenging, you're not a true leader. If you're just supporting and you're just like, come cry on my shoulder, you know, I'm here for you, you're not a leader. But if you challenge and support, and that's what he did, he challenged me and then he supported me. He guided me to a place where I could, you know, become who I really am. And then the other aspect that I'll say is that I grew up thinking like having like very few people, like one or two, like one of them being my dad, another being my like my youth leader that I admired, and I kind of went for everything for advice. And then later in life, I realized it was kind of silly because no one's an expert in all things. And so the mentors, like as I think of the mentors that have had such a big impact on me, is it's been so many people, and it's one thing from this person and one thing from this person. And so now for me, the first thing I think of, if there's something that I want to become, the first thought I have is there's got to be a coach that does that. And I go find them. I go invest in myself, be all in that process, and save, turn decades into days by just getting someone who's not like doing it for their 9 to 5, and just like as a way to provide for their family, even though again, coaches provide for their family by doing what they do, but they're doing it out of like their greatest passion and purpose. Not all coaches, but the right coach, right? A powerful coach is doing it because that's what they feel called to do, because the crap has revealed their craft. The struggles and adversity that they've experienced in their life allowed them to realize and discover a better way. And now that's what they're doing. So I just get different things from different people when I need them. And it turns decades into days. It really, really has sped up my growth. And it's not about achievement. It's all about becoming. And one of the most core things to my belief system is that the secret of becoming is that achievement always follows. And so the moment you focus on achievement is the same moment that you lose the guarantee of achievement. Because we end up burning out, we end up missing a run, we end up feeling like the scale's not going down, we end up whatever it is. And when we focus on becoming, success becomes inevitable because we have the joy of the process, the fulfillment of the journey, and then the outcome is just a surprise because we're not even thinking about it, and it slaps you across the face with more joy and more fulfillment. But when you focus on achievement, you don't feel the achievement because we do what I call goal shifting. Mm. It's like you get there and then you normalize it. Your brain normalizes it. And then you're like, now on to the next thing, We do this in business. We do this in life. We do it everywhere. But when you're focused on becoming, success becomes inevitable.
That's awesome.
Arthur C. Brooks says happiness is not a destination. It's a direction. Mm. Meaning, and I guess similar to achievement, right? Like we focus on achievement, but achievement is one thing. Mm-hmm. Where becoming is a constant.
It's infinite.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And happiness, I guess, is the same way, right? Like you're never going to be happy all the time, but happiness can be a direction where we're constantly trying to find ways to be more happy and more fulfilled, really, is what we're looking to be in life.
The interesting thing about setting goals or focusing on achievement is that goal setting only works for 9% of people. There's an amazing study about New Year's resolutions about how 59% of people don't set goals for the year. And then of the 41% that do, only 9% officially achieve those goals. Yeah, and Strava, the fitness tracking app that you and I are on, in 2019, they had 800 million user logged activities. And they found that January 19th was the day that most people fell off. And they deemed that day, January 19th, as Quitter's Day as a company, right? Because it's so much of a real thing.
Yeah.
And
they have the data to back it up now.
And going back to this conversation of shame, like I challenge you to find anybody that doesn't feel like they should have goals. We all feel like we should have goals, but it only works for 9% of people.
So why do it?
Why do it? Or is there a better way? Which is, I created the anti-goal mindset, which is how to achieve massive results without setting goals. And one of the things that I found was that when you set a goal, it limits you, because we only can set goals from our present self, from who we are today. And if you could become who you really are consistently, consistently live in a powerful state, take daily consistent action over time, 3 months down the road, even 30 days, but 3 months, 6 months, 1 year from now, any goal that you would set from your present self today would look silly to your future self, to who you really are.
Totally. Well, it's funny because we've even talked about this, and I wrote a LinkedIn post about this yesterday. Like, I had no idea what scroll was going to be.
Mm-hmm. You can't.
No clue. I had a little bit of foresight into the fact that I knew I was going to keep trying, but I didn't even know I was going to give it 4 years. I let alone like build it to multi-millions of dollars. Like, at the time, I think my mind could only fathom doing $10,000, you know? So to set a goal year one to do the millions we've done now wouldn't have made sense. And I guess, yeah, how, as a company, it's important to forecast and set goals. Like, how do you have an anti-goal setting mind as a company?
There's a phrase that I saw on LinkedIn, like a post, and they said, write your goals in pen and your plans in pencil. Okay.
Ooh.
It's cool and we all love it, and it goes viral every time someone posts that idea, but it only works for 9% of people, remember? that's good. But we're going to flip that. And that's what I do in my life, which is I write my goals and my plans in pen and my goals in pencil. Okay. I write my plans in pen and my goals in pencil. Mm. And the difference is that it's not that you can't have goals. If it works for you, you're one of the 9%. Keep doing it. It's great. But if it doesn't, then you can create something that I feel is more deep and more fulfilling, which is creating vision for yourself, for imagining and seeing your future as the way you want it to be. I have an exercise that I do myself, that I give my clients, which is called Your Perfect Day, or I call it In 5 Years. And you just write down, there's like tons of questions, and it's everything you want, you imagine your life feeling and looking like. And one of the things that I wrote down is, just feels so silly, but that I wear Lululemon pants every day. Here I am wearing Lululemon pants. And what I've consistently found is that where there's no vision, the people perish. So in a business, you do need vision, but when it's your focus, you lose the guarantee of that vision coming into reality. And if you do achieve that vision and that purpose, it will be limited, because you had created it from your future self, from your present self. And so by detaching from the outcomes, by writing your goals in pen and your plans in pencil, by showing up consistently, the thing I love about pen is that pen fades if you don't maintain it, right? So you can set the goals as a company. You can not have them be the main focus, but rather focus on becoming, helping your people love the process, love the work they're doing, love who they are, become more of who they really are, instead of trying to fit people into the box that you think they should be as a manager. I create another version of you, which is what a lot of people do, like really lean into strengths of your individual, of your employees, which is not, strengths are not always something that you're good at, which the corporate world wants to squeeze everything out of everyone of what they're good at, and they bucket them and pigeonhole and corner them into like their strengths, and that's what they do. And like, they become very unfulfilled because they're doing the thing that they are good at, but that isn't actually a strength, because a strength is not what you're good at. A strength is what makes you feel alive. And when you focus on becoming and do what makes you feel alive, you actually have the greatest capacity to become way better at that than what your typical classified strengths are, because you're living from a place of power, and from a powerful state, you can do nothing but create powerfully.
So Mitch, there's a lot of, obviously you're a great coach. You have a lot of great insights. But something Dan and I have talked about in the past too is like, there's all these people who sell courses. Mm-hmm. There's all these people who are that a lot of people just consider like scam artists that sell courses or coaching, because they really don't have anything of value, or they're just ripping off the next guy. How can people be aware of how to pick a good coach versus someone who might just be selling a course that they've duplicated, or a program they've duplicated, or something like that?
Yeah.
And like, what makes a good coach?
Someone just on LinkedIn was just, they commented, I shared a post and they were like saying like, wow, this is an amazing pitch for coaching. Like, I wasn't pitching coaching. And so I told him, I said, if you think this is a pitch, maybe you want to be sold, because that's the perspective you're coming, yeah, you know, to this. Yeah. And I thought that was really interesting. And he messaged me and I said, yeah, I actually love to be sold when it's the right thing, but I've been skeptical of coaching in the past. And he asked the same question of like, how do you find the right coach? I don't have the best answer for this, because the coaches that I've worked with have felt so godsent. Like, one of them came through a Facebook ad. Okay. Awesome. Another one, like, was someone that I met at church. Amazing. Another one was someone that was referred to me from someone else that I admired and was doing what I wanted to do. And they pointed me in that direction. So there's, I can't like say like, yeah, go, you know, they're all different channels. I can't like tell there's people how to find. Yeah. But what I can invite people to do is to be very open to investing in themselves and be very open to looking for help, for asking for help. Because most of us aren't asking for help. Like, it's very, very rare for anybody to ever even get on a consultation with a coach. Few people statistically do that in their lifetime, let alone like move forward and invest in themselves. So this guy who wants to be sold, you know, whether he really does or not, I think he really does, because I personally love to be sold. When what the seller, what the creator, the coach, the person is saying deeply resonates with my soul. And so I'm just looking for messaging of people talking about, you know, what they've been through and what they've experienced and what their solutions are and how they help people. And when it's exactly what I've experienced, I'm not a skeptical, right?
So alignment.
Yeah, just alignment. When it's just like, yeah, you're speaking exactly into the heart of that I have, the thoughts that I have, and you have what I want. And if it ends up being a duplicate of someone else or some scam, like, you're gonna feel that very quickly. I personally have not experienced it. And I think part of whether or not something is feels like a scam to you is if you go into it believing it.
Yeah,
right? You get what you put into something.
Yeah, 100%. Circumstance. Yeah.
And even if you are like scammed, more or less. I can't remember. I saw there was this woman and she had posted about like spending an insane amount of money basically on personal growth, right? And she felt like even on some of the people that she'd spent a lot of money on, she wasn't fulfilled then. And then on some people she'd spent a little bit of money with and felt a lot of fulfillment. Mm-hmm. And she had realized, now that she's a coach, she'd realized, she's like, it really, like, I actually learned more now looking back from even the time that I had spent more money and hadn't been fulfilled, because now I know what not to do or what to do, right? And she just obviously mindset shift on like investment in herself. And I think that that's huge. Like, alignment is totally huge. And I think you need to find people that are probably either, again, it's this wanting to become the person that you want to become, right? You want to find people who are probably already at or have same amount of experience as you, so that you can learn from them.
That are just a few steps ahead.
Yeah.
That's what you want. It doesn't have to be the ultimate coach. Like, it doesn't have to be the perfect person, but if they're a few steps ahead of you and they can give you one distinction that changes your life, it's worth it. And that's for me, like all of my clients get the full value of their coaching within our first session. I'm convinced of that. I've heard that from many of my clients over and over and over again. And I'll tell you, you know, a story that taught me this principle, which was, I was hanging out with a friend and he's a coach and we were playing a yard game in his backyard. It's called Bottle Bash. I don't know if you've ever played this game.
Oh, yeah.
It's heard fun. Of it. It's very fun. It's like this 5-foot little thin stake in the ground, and you put a plastic bottle on top of this disc, and then you throw a frisbee to try to hit the bottle off.
Right.
Okay. And if you're coordinated, you're no longer coordinated playing this game, because when the frisbee hits the bottle, you all by yourself have to catch the frisbee and the bottle before it hits the ground, and it's going everywhere, right?
Yeah.
And I'm a competitive person. I like to win things. I also typically win things, right? I don't know if I just like will it and just stay calm, you know, and present and just, I don't know. It works out a lot of times. And I'm getting destroyed by my friend, absolutely destroyed. And in the middle of the game, he says, "Can I give you a tip?" And I said, "Yeah, I'd love it, you know." And he said, "Perfect. I'll wait till after this game because I want to destroy you." So he smoked me 21-8. Okay. So no competition here. After the game, he said, "Are you ready?" And I said, "I'm ready." He said, "Right now, your foot is pointed exactly where you want the Frisbee to go. Turn your foot exactly perpendicular to where you want the Frisbee to go and watch how it changes the game." Felt very uncomfortable for me, very awkward, very counterintuitive, but I did it. And I start hitting this tiny stake, like, I don't know, 20 feet away, 3 and 4 times in a row. And I have no experience with a Frisbee, like very little experience. And I ended up beating him by 6 points that very game, next game. And he said, "If that's not the power of coaching, I don't know what is."
That's beautiful.
Yeah, that's awesome.
It's the small distinctions that can permanently change your life that make coaching worth it. So you don't have to like find this coach that has it all. But if you come from a place of desire, of willingness, of openness, ready to ask for help, ready to learn, ready to apply, to do the things that you learn, then you may never be the same. I can never throw a Frisbee with my toe pointed forward again. I will always have my foot perpendicular. And there's just certain things like that that we learn when we understand our conscious thinking in a way that applies. And sometimes a course doesn't do that for you. Yeah. That's the beautiful thing that I've loved about one-on-one coaching or group coaching, spending time with real people, not just on a screen, is that it's very high touch, very personal, very custom, and gets to the core of your challenges, your unconscious beliefs, and allows you to rewire your brain instead of just learning something cool that might reframe your thought.
Mm. So what's the next thing for you, Mitch? Like what's Mitch's vision? To what are your pen to paper plans to get to your vision?
Yeah, what's the 5-year perfect day look like?
Yeah, for me, like the first thought that I have is that it's just all about becoming. So I'm really, truly focused. I have zero goals for my business or for my life. And it's really amazing because I've exceeded every goal that I ever set before, like tenfold, literally tenfold. And so I'm just focused on becoming. And I know that the secret of becoming is that achievement always follows. And so, for example, like I'm on podcasts, I'm making video because podcasts and videos used to really scare me. So I'm just literally doing this not to get more clients, not to grow my business, but to become someone who can speak and share his message in the most impactful way possible. And the way I do that is by doing the things that scare me. This week is a big week in terms of what's next for me. I've just flown in from Arkansas last night. Here on this podcast, I'll be on another podcast in studio this week. I have VIP access to Tony Robbins, Gary Vaynerchuk, Jim Quick, who else? Jesse Itzler, Dean Graziosi, amazing
Jesse
leaders.
Jesse Itzler's like my favorite person of all time, by the way.
It's going to be so fun. Oh my gosh. So fun.
Tell him.
For the 2-day event, Silicon Slope Summit, the Wednesday night after the first day of the event, I'm hosting 35 of my clients for a private dinner. The next night, I'm hosting with 10 creator friends from LinkedIn an event where we have 300 RSVPs of people that we know and love, and some of them we don't know but we love and we can't wait to meet. And then get to see my dad this week, get to see my grandma and my grandpa, hopefully some other family that I'm in town to see, and then just raising my kids, just loving my wife. Like that's really the thing I'm most excited about is I'm just protecting my values and living from my values rather than towards them. And just trying to act like a puppy on the ground with my daughter as much as possible and wrestle my boy.
And I know that's awesome, we talked about LinkedIn is really the only platform you're on as a social media. Mm-hmm. So is that where people can find you and reach out?
You can reach out on LinkedIn. That's the only way to find me. And I create content daily, generally. I have a lot of grace for myself, so I don't feel like I should post every day. But when I can and I want to, I do.
Even on weekends?
Yep. I don't post on weekends.
No weekends?
No, very rarely. Just very, very rarely. Friday. Yeah, Monday through Friday.
Awesome. Well, we could have an entire episode, too, talking about the way you structure your work now. Because I know that you obviously went from the 40 to 50-hour work week to a big change in your work week now. And I'd love to even maybe do like an episode 2 on that sometime, because I'm sure we could talk for hours on that.
Oh yeah.
But this has been crazy insightful for us. I feel we just scored
the best
free coaching session of all
time. I love it. No, you're so nice.
Really, I'm super glad we can make it work, especially this week while you're
Thanks for the invite. It's so fun.
Oh my gosh.
Anytime.
This is great.
we're excited to continue our friendship. So again, we really appreciate the time, Mitch. Maybe leave on your single piece of advice for mm-hmm. someone wanting to make a change in their life.
Yeah. The thing that comes to mind is something that I don't actually often share, but there's a lot of amazing resources out there, an infinite amount of resources, but there's only one thing that is the source of all change, and it's God. If you don't believe in God, try it. If you do believe in God, believe in him a little bit more, and you'll be guided to the resources that you need for yourself. It might be a coach, it might be something else, but that's the true resource.
Love it. Thank you, awesome. Mitch. Appreciate it.
Well, this has been awesome. Mitch, thank you for coming on. We're definitely going to have to do a round two sometime.
Would love it.
And if you haven't heard of Mitch Whiting, look him up on LinkedIn. And please, I know Mitch is always willing to communicate with people. I know that you also do free consultations for people.
That's right. Yeah, I could tell you who I support, right?
Yeah.
Because it's not for everybody.
Yeah, and please do.
Most people that I have consultations with, I end up not giving them an offer to work with me, only if they're truly my ideal client. And my ideal client is family-centered leaders and entrepreneurs who are ready to admit that they want and need more from life, like we've talked about today, and who want to become the man or woman that they're meant to be for two reasons. Not for more money, not for more fame, not for more recognition, but to be happy with themselves and deeply present with their family. And that's what I call deep success. So we're not chasing success together, which my clients already have. They have plenty of it, right? Even if sometimes they feel like unworthy of it. But deep success, which is the ability to sit in the peace of the silence of your own soul without any need for distraction or escape, to be happy with yourself and deeply present with your family. And so if that's interesting to you and you want further support, I offer a free consultation, 1 hour, one-on-one with me to just get clear on exactly where you are, exactly where you want to be, and how we can bridge that gap, how we can create the life that you're looking to create. And if we both feel like it's a good fit, we can talk about what it looks like to work together.
Awesome. Well, Mitch, this has been awesome. Thank you so much.
And good luck with all the events this week.
It's going to be fun.
I'm excited for you.
It's going to be so fun.
It's going to be awesome, man.
Yeah.
So
that's a wrap.
That's a wrap.
Scroll Sessions. Thank you, everybody.